See, that wasn't so hard.
Somebody get this stupid costume off me!
Welcome back to A Stark Contrast, where we discuss the differences and similarities between Marvel Comics and their MCU counterparts. And we are your hosts, Jeffrey.
And I.
Hello, hello, and welcome back, everybody.
Welcome back, Jeff the Land Shark.
We are here, yes.
Yeah, we're here. We're just playing another round of Marvel Rivals because we're obsessed. And
it is so fun. I was talking this to my friend. I was talking about this with my friend like yesterday. Like, we play mostly COD, but... I was telling him, like man, like, it's so fun to play. Like, it's just fun. Marvel Rivals is just so fun.
Yeah. Have you tried all the new stuff yet? The Lunar New Year, like the soccer game.
No, I haven't even did that. I just hop into quick play, and like, my thing is like, I just want to learn as many characters as I can, because I don't want to just be stuck to one character.
Like me.
But if you like somebody, you like somebody. I think it's cool because, like, I think why I like it also, it's because it's all heroes that we know.
Yeah, that's what my nephew said.
That's what makes it so fun.
Yeah, exactly.
But like, my number, I have Scarlet Witch is my most hours played.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. No doubt.
But yeah, it's so fun. I love playing, especially if you have like a whole stack of friends playing. It's fun.
That's
yeah.
cool. Don't know that life. I wish I did. I only have one friend. Shout out Andrew. Hey,
it gets
what's
pretty
up?
Chaotic. Like, yeah. I think I play with like four of us in quick play.
And
it gets pretty.
Sure.
It's just so funny hearing like the comms.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, Scarlet's one. Like, oh, Punisher's one. Like one. I'm like, oh my God. Like, am I in a Marvel movie right now? Like, this is crazy.
Funny. Oh my gosh. So yeah, welcome back to the show. Before we get into our other top chat news aside, Marvel Rivals, I just wanted to give a listener shout out to Curly Insane Guy on Threads and other platforms. Yeah, he has come on board on listening and subscribing and all the good stuff. And he's one of those listeners that he's like, I'm dedicated to listening to every episode. So I really
appreciate that.
Super duper respect. And so he had posted on Threads, on his social media, didn't stick with my plan of updating my progress on listening to all the Stark Contrast podcast episodes. So here's an update. I'm all caught up.
Oh my gosh.
So he is completely, it's so flattering. I mean, I love that. And I love that he loves the show. So I appreciate that. Thank you so much for that. And yeah. And then, as predicted, tickets for Captain America Brave New World are officially available. And Jeffrey and I scored tickets to the fan event. So we'll be seeing it at El Capitan. Hopefully they will bring somebody out again. I mean, they've kind of left us hanging for the last couple, I think.
No. It's because you went to
Deadpool and Wolverine.
It's because you went to see.
Yeah, my bad.
So no one came to that because I went to the Cap one. Yeah, but it was during the same weekend as Comic-Con.
Yeah.
So like...
So hopefully
I remember telling people in line behind me, I was just like, they're like, oh, like, I was like, oh, someone usually comes out. But I was like, I don't think so, just because Comic-Con is the same day.
So hopefully it will happen this time around. It is the day before Valentine's Day. However, should be okay. And I still have not watched anything.
Respect.
Respect. I feel the love for Sam Cap, and hopefully the film is good.
I mean,
I don't see why it wouldn't, but you know,
everyone has their opinions.
Of course, exactly right. And then, speaking of fan events, Insomniac Games is holding a community day on Saturday, February 1st. And so Jeff is not going to come with, but I did get two tickets.
Nice.
They're completely sold out. It is a free event. So it was first come, first served completely.
Oh.
And so it's free parking, which is big if you're from LA.
Yeah.
So they're giving the complimentary parking, free access to their campus, free food trucks, free swag, free meet and greet with voice actors and devs, and you get panels and discussions on top of that. And I was like,
Oh my gosh.
And they even ask you, well, they're going to ask again, but you can choose which verse or which fandom you're coming from for Insomniac.
Love that.
So I was like, okay. I was like, sign me up for all the Spider-Man stuff. Like, yeah. Let's go.
I was going to say, I don't know how much. I know Insomniac does a lot.
Yeah.
But I only know them for their big comic book stuff.
Sure.
So I'm like, oh, what else do they
I'm
do?
I'm very curious. And so, you know, coincidentally, people were noting like, oh, you know, Insomniac's been very quiet about the status of Wolverine, the game.
I know, ever since the leak.
Yeah, ever since the leak. And so I'm hoping and wondering, I'm like, is this the thing? Is this where they're to finally say arriving summer 2025, like whatever it is?
Probably not 2026.
Yeah, it's probably 2026, unfortunately. But at least we would have a date.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
That's February what I'm waiting first. For. It's kind of like the only, Insomniac's kind of like the only reason why I have a PS5.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, because the exclusivity.
Or just like PS5 exclusive games, yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Very excited about that. We'll see what happens. And last but not least, don't forget, Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man begins streaming January 29th. And so that's next week. Are you going to tune in to watch it?
Of course. I'm watching everything.
I don't know if they're dropping it all at once, but I have a feeling it's probably going to be weekly.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking forward to it. I hope it's enjoyable, and the character introductions and the Osborns.
I know.
And
I haven't seen the most recent clip yet.
I haven't watched anything. Yeah, I haven't watched anything because I'm being a purist, but we'll see. We'll see. And so before we dive into this, I don't remember when I got this, but I was shopping with a friend and we walked into Box Lunch and I found these trivia cards.
Of course
and I
was you did. Like,
I was like, oh, you know, if they're affordable, I'll get them. And then I was like, oh, it's only $14.
Oh, wow.
I'm in. And so it's a beautiful little art decal logo box and it's got all these pop quizzes.
Of course.
In here. So do you want to take a shot? Oh, this is going to be easy. And so
yes,
essentially,
easy questions finally, guys.
And these are all across the board, but they are indeed MCU only. So this is right up Jeff's
alley. It's my time to shine this year, guys. My time to shine.
And so I feel free to say if you want multiple choice, but I have enough faith in you that I don't even have to say multiple choice.
Okay.
So
let's see. I don't know. Okay, let's not. Let's not gas me up yet.
Let's take us for a trial run here.
Sure.
In Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2,
uh-huh.
Which of Yondu's lieutenants leads the mutiny against him?
Which of Yondu's lieutenants?
Yes.
Leads the mutiny against him?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you might need to, because I don't remember all of their names.
Okay. Is
it- Oh, wait. Is it...
Taserface. Yeah.
Taserface.
Yeah. These cards are really neat.
My bad. We're back, guys.
You're
so back.
You're so back.
We're so back.
Yeah. The cards are neat because they show, like, if you were to do a point system with friends, it has like four choices you can choose from.
Mm.
You get like 2 points. Then if you just want to make it easier, you narrow it down between two. Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
So it's a point system. So the options that they have written on this card are Electroface.
Okay, I think once you read off that first one, I would have been like, oh, I know exactly what
it is. Yeah, exactly. Taserface, Zinger Toes, and Razor Feet. Razor Feet. So it's a lot of those, a lot of fun questions. If you're looking for a nice little party game with your Marvel buddies, go and get you some of these trivia cards. Super cute. Box Lunch, hook you up. Pretty good. So, we can just dive into our episode now from there. And a reminder, we are not experts and we don't claim to be. We're just a couple of nerds nerding out. And in this episode, we're nerding out all about Mysterio.
Mysterio.
Mysterio. He's somebody I could see coming into Marvel Rivals, for the record.
That would be an insane.
He'd be like Loki, I think.
A healer, you think?
Not a healer necessarily, but like he would have attributes of the multiple.
Honestly, yes, I
you
agree. Clones
mean?
And everything.
Clones,
yeah.
And yeah, it'd be, and maybe a little cloak action where he just blacks you out and you can't see anything. Yeah, pretty cool stuff. So, Mysterio, let's start from the beginning, created by Stan Lee and Steve Ditko. First appearance, The Amazing Spider-Man, number 13, June 1964, with the issue title, The Menace of Mysterio.
Mm.
And so, While we're covering the first and original Mysterio appearance, Quentin Beck, he actually makes his appearance in Amazing Spider-Man number 2. So he debuts a year, clear year before he comes in as Mysterio. But we'll talk a little bit more about that later. But this issue that we are discussing today, as far as prices go, is the first official appearance of him as a villain. And so before I show you the cover, 1964, give it a guess.
Let me go 12 again.
12 again. Yes. Yeah, so... Need I remind you, like, this is literally two issues from the last episode we did, Kraven. Mm. So,
oh, that's right.
Kraven came in number 15. And so imagine, if you will, the timeline of Spider-Man, and he, like, encounters Mysterio, and literally two issues later, he encounters Kraven and the Chameleon. Yeah, again,
Spider-Man had it hard, man.
Yeah, and over three issues, if you think about it, that's technically like a week in Peter Parker's life.
This guy can't get, he's just trying to go to class. Exactly. Guys.
Yeah, because he's still in high school in this, phase. And so here's the cover, and as you can tell,
yeah,
back in the day, text heavy, super conceptualized, yeah, not just one picture, it's multi-panel. And yeah, they it's funny because I feel like every time they introduced one of these Sinister Six, mm-hmm, we've created the most maniacal supervillain of all. And they've done it here. Yeah. They say, we've done it. We've created the greatest villain of all. First, Old Spidey and, you know, Mysterio.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, they were trying to, like, you know, reel the reader in and get some kids to pay the 12 cents to get this issue. And so... as far as the highest I could find for sale right now, Shortboxed had a CGC 6.5 for $1,900.
Wow.
And eBay had a 7.0 that recently sold for $2,500. Still worth a pretty penny. Not as much as I would have anticipated for a 1964 Amazing Spider-Man book, let alone a first appearance of a major villain.
Mm-hmm.
But these are, again, are 6.5 and 7.0. Probably 9.0, you hike that up to maybe 10 grand. So that makes sense. Yeah. And then the lowest graded I could find on Shortbox was a CGC 4.5 that is going for $1,200. And I just wanted to note here that there are lower grades available in the 2.0 to 2.5 range, but those were restored. So someone has gone through the process of pressing it and cleaning it and all that stuff.
Uh-huh.
And those go for $600 to $700.
Oh my gosh.
And then there is a CGC 0.5 that sold on eBay for $200. A 0.5.
And dude, that's like...
It was restored. Which is what?
How do you restore a 0.5?
Can you imagine how bad that book must
have
been?
It's got to be horrendous.
Oh, it must have been absolutely tarnished and tainted.
Horrible. Horrible condition.
Yeah, it's so crazy. And someone still paid $200 for it. But fair market value states that this book should be around $1,300 to $1,800 if you're getting the right price. And if you just want the comic raw in a pretty good shape, $100, it'll get you this comic. Not too bad. So, first exposure to the character.
Mysterio.
Yeah, this one I'm curious too.
I don't think it's, there's no way it was Jake Gyllenhaal. There's no way.
No, that's really interesting.
No, I don't think so.
Hmm.
No.
Video game.
I would say so, or even just the name of it. Obviously, he just went by name.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Mysterio, when J. Jonah Jameson said it in Spider-Man 2. Like his name was mentioned.
Yeah, his name was mentioned.
The guy's name, like Mysterio.
Yeah.
Or something like that. Yeah.
Doctor Strange.
Yeah. And I was like, ooh, Mysterio.
Yeah.
And then probably like a quick Google search, and I was like, oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be that.
Interesting.
Yeah. Like the first, like the Sam Raimi
yeah, films. Okay.
Yeah.
Me, I don't remember. Again, it's a blur. It's somewhere between the trading cards and the Spider-Man animated series. But I did, again, I used to, when I first got into books and my parents would actually buy me like trade paperbacks, I legitimately had started with those Barnes & Noble ones that were like gray border and they had like 10 issues in them.
Yeah.
And so that's probably my first real exposure to him. So probably in the ballpark of, you know, I was probably 13 or something, maybe.
Yeah.
So a long time ago. but yeah, I think it might have been one of these classic trades. So yeah, it's kind of a haze, but it's been a minute for sure. And so when it comes to Mysterio's bio, I have him in our mini supervillains book. And this one is interesting because, you know, I hadn't really thought too deeply about it, his comic book version. Because, yeah, like you mentioned, Jake Gyllenhaal is so recent. And it was such an impression made, like, on screen. Like, oh, yeah, that's...
When was Far From Home?
21?
Was it? No, that's not right.
2019. So it was 2019. Oh. But still, it was...
I'm wrong.
It's okay. Well, it feels a lot... I mean, it doesn't feel that long ago.
I thought it was after COVID.
Because you think about it? But then I think about 6 years.
No Way Home is after COVID.
Yes, correct. And so, yeah, like Jake Gyllenhaal's version had such an impression that I forget how much of a departure it is from the comic book version. So the bio reads... Hollywood special effects guru Quentin Beck used movie magic to gain infamy as the first Mysterio, using illusions to amaze Spider-Man. Later, Beck faked his own death and others used his technology to masquerade as Mysterio, though it's a matter of time before Beck returns to the supervillain spotlight. So there's a lot of illusion happening with this character, and we'll dive into it as we go along here. So we will take it back to the beginning with his first true appearance, and in our previous episode, again, we discussed Kraven the Hunter, who debuted just 2 issues after this one. So it's so crazy to think about, like, oh god, what a week Peter Parker is having. Literal days of comic continuity between these characters' intro. The story itself opens with our favorite web slinger seemingly robbing somebody.
Of course.
And they tease that on the covers, like, Spider-Man.
a thief!
He wants to come out! What's this? Spider-Man turning to crime? You're in for a real shock. I can't hold him back. JJ has to come in.
Spider-Man is a thief!
Yeah, exactly. So he's seemingly robbing people, and crowds are present for these actions, and so people react, and the word spreads across the city, and they're just like, Spider-Man is actually turning into this menace that JJ... This is also a great derivative of why JJ took it so far.
Yeah.
Because all this stuff is happening to him, and he's like, Spider-Man! He's a criminal!
He's a criminal and a menace!
He's a menace! Yeah, because of all this stuff, right? Like, you think, like, oh, he's outrageous, and then you go back to these issues, and you're like, oh...
Yeah, J.K. Simmons really just took it home, man.
He really did. It spreads throughout all the people, the locals, and it finally, you know, once it makes its way to the Bugle, it finally reaches Peter, and he's like, oh no, like, what's happening? And so it rocks him so deeply that he begins to believe he's got a Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde situation going on. Mm-hmm. And so to get his mind off of things, because mind you, once again, oh, Peter, are you eating enough protein? Peter. Yeah, she's ricketing around, and they're trying to make mortgage. He's a poor kid.
Sure.
Thinking about the girls and all this stuff. And so Peter then attempts to make money taking photos of Spider-Man for JJ, despite the entire city looking for him. So he's like, I need money. But everyone's coming after me. Yeah. And so unfortunately for him, they come after him like a mob the minute he shows his face as Spider-Man. Everyone's convinced he is a bad guy. We need to get him reward money. JJ's offering money for pictures, the whole shebang. So Peter then decides to take the safer civilian route for the meanwhile. And then back at the Bugle, JJ calls a meeting. And he has at this point received a note from someone who was boasting, oh, I can get rid of Spider-Man. And then we're finally introduced to Mysterio. He literally comes into a room like this.
That's such like a, I mean, I know it's the times, but even for the times, that is such a bold villain outfit. But then again, there's Vulture, who's a literal bird with feathers.
Yeah, exactly.
But I'm like, whoa.
Yeah, he's got this flair to him. The purple cape or yeah. like what would you even call this? Is even just a cape?
Like, I don't
this
even is know. A, yeah. Like if a character dressed up like that came up in an MCU movie,
yeah.
you would not take that character
for
seriously.
Sure. No, 100%, right? And he's got like the eyelets on each yeah,
like a green
clavicle.
Suit, a yeah, big fishbowl of a head.
Yep. And you hit the nail on the head. They immediately called him Fishbowl. Like, JJ calls him Fishbowl.
Who's this Fishbowl? Yeah. I can't do your voice. Like, so, oh, my God.
Yeah. And so he comes in very theatrically, very dramatically with the mist and the mystifying Mysterio. And even they say, like, what a getup. He's cornier looking than Spider-Man. So they're very self-aware. And so he comes in, and we are just introduced to Mysterio in all his glory. And it's funny because he sent JJ a letter only to give him another letter. So he sends him this. He's like, I'm going to get rid of Spider-Man. Shows up, gives him this envelope, and then disappears. It's like, what are you doing? And then this is the funny thing, because JJ
disappear.
Yeah, it's exactly Cloak and Dagger from Rivals. I'm like, ugh. And so JJ, you know, he literally disappears. JJ opens this second letter and he's like, I don't get it, but it must make sense, or Mysterio wouldn't have gone to all this trouble. And the letter literally says, print a notice in the Daily Bugle saying, if Spider-Man wants to learn the truth about himself, he should meet Mysterio atop the Brooklyn Bridge.
Oh.
And it's just like, oh gosh, whatever. It's so dramatic. You'll see that this is a consistent theme when it comes to Mysterio. And so the showdown happens. Spider-Man goes to the Brooklyn Bridge to meet Mysterio, but Mysterio makes an absolute fool of Spidey, and he thwarts every single hit, every single kick, and it absolutely humbles Peter, who eventually falls into the river and taps out. He's like, I can't do it. Because like, he's caught in this cloud and just blindly punching and kicking and nothing is landing. And so he himself gets so exhausted. He's just like, you know what? Can't do it. Falls into the river. Plop. And Mysterio is basically rewarded for this because he's succeeded in what he was going to do. He said he was going to take Spider-Man down. Boom, he did. And so he was so rewarded that they put on a parade in his honor. And so people were rejoicing, and everyone is enjoying this moment of glory for this seemingly hero, except for Peter and his old pal, Flash Thompson.
Wow.
Because as you remember, Flash Thompson in the comics and in the MCU and all versions of him, huge Spider-Man fan, fanboy, loves Spider-Man. Spider-Man can do no wrong. And so it's the one thing that he and Peter Parker have in common is that they both kind of, oh, you know, Spider-Man isn't that bad, is he? And then, you know, Flash is like, he didn't do anything wrong. He's perfect. This is wrong. This isn't true. Yeah. And so we go back to the Bugle, and then Mysterio is once again, you know, negotiating with JJ. And they've struck this deal that Mysterio himself will reveal his own identity after ending Spidey once and for all. And so Peter, however, takes the opportunity to slip a spider tracker onto Mysterio. He basically approaches him as himself, and he's like, oh, it's great to meet you, you know, thanks for saving the city. As they're shaking hands and Mysterio isn't looking, coincidentally, he slips a tiny little spider tracker, boom, onto his like tremendous cape. And then he decides, okay, great, I'm gonna finally get some redemption from our first fight. And he follows him to this mysterious lair that Mysterio has made for himself. And so Mysterio nearly knocks Spider-Man on his ass again. But in true supervillain form, he decidedly thinks that this is the point in the story where he's going to tell everything about himself. So Spider-Man's cowering and he's like, this is where I'm going to tell you why I became a supervillain. And so it's very interesting because he reveals that he was once a movie stuntman and then became a special effects man for TV movies, designing costumes and props. And so this is the panel, and it's don't be surprised by how he looks in the comics. He's not exactly the handsome Jake Gyllenhaal you'd imagine.
Whoa.
Yeah, he's I mean, this is just drawing, but you can tell.
It looks dark.
He's not necessarily like a handsome man. Yeah. One would call a handsome man. He's just the average looking Joe, and he's got a kind of a black bowl cut.
Yeah.
And so the work that he did for the costumes and props inspired him to then imitate Spider-Man, mm-hmm. who was on the cover of the front page every morning. And, you know, like he kind of wanted to be as sensational, no pun intended, as Spider-Man, because he was getting so much attention for what he did.
Yeah.
And so you get the idea that, okay, well, Quentin Beck has just come from a place where he was never rewarded for what he did. No credit was due. Kind of sounds like Hollywood in the industry, if you ask me. And so the way that the song goes, you know, like Spider-Man does whatever a spider can. Mysterio took it upon himself to do no different, just artificially instead of naturally. So he thought, okay, he can stick to walls. I can do that. I can just make something. Oh, he can do webbing. Well, I can do that too. And so he took it upon himself to then concoct the perfect crime. And then do one better in creating the hero persona to counterbalance tainting like Spider-Man's reputation. So he wanted to create his version of Spider-Man, which is the version that we saw in the beginning of the issue, robbing people. It's Mysterio, because he had learned how to replicate him, which might sound familiar considering we just talked about Kraven doing almost the same thing in the black suit. And so little does Mysterio realize, however, that Spider-Man was recording the entire time. So he got it all on tape. He's like, thanks. You just admitted everything on tape. Got it on his tape recorder.
Wow.
And then very quickly, here's a panel of Quentin learning.
How to be.
Yeah. And so he added, you know.
Whoa. That was crazy.
He blabbed so much that he even shared how he made his helmet and the acid to, you know, dissolve the webbing and make the webbing itself and suction cups on his soles and stuff. It's so ridiculous. And so, yeah, Spider-Man very much just is like, gotcha.
Wow.
Yeah. And they fight again. It's like one round after another. And the film actually did a really great way of depicting the fights between these two, because you know, you think about this again, it's a 1964 comic book. It's literally 60 years ago, right? Is it 60 years? 60?
It is. 64?
And yeah, it's 2025? Holy smokes.
No, is that?
We can't math. 40,
yes.
20, 60.
It is.
Yeah. So
gross.
It's 60, wow. 60 years ago. And so a lot of when you see the panels, they're very simple, right? Like you see here, it's just a cloud, plumes of clouds and smoke, and then Spider-Man aimlessly kicking and punching. Mm-hmm. And so it reminded me a lot of that sequence where Peter is full on hallucinating and that incredible like FX scene, one after another of many Mysterios, of the zombie Tony Stark, and like when Spidey was going through it. It is very much a replica of Steve Ditko's work, which is so crazy. And so in this final fight, the two crash onto a movie set, and Spidey had set up his camera to capture the action so he could make his money. Mm. And so
that's so funny.
It's so funny, and it's the essence of Spider-Man. It's very much what we saw in the Raimi films, as well as Mark Webb and you know John Watts. And so finally victorious, Spidey cleared his reputation with the police and thankfully got a nice fat check from JJ, as Mysterio was then whisked away to jail. And that was it. That's the issue. And so it introduced, a very formidable sort of villain into this world of Spider-Man. And so, of course, on the MCU side, Quentin Beck, Mysterio, portrayed by Jake Gyllenhaal, first and last seen in 2019's Spider-Man Far From Home. And so 91% tomato rate.
Wow,
yeah, tomato meter, and 95% on popcorn meter. So people loved this film. I don't think it's the highest Spider-Man film.
I think
it's Spider-Man 2.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And it's so good. Why I like it so much is like how like deceiving it really is that like we see Spider-Man pretty much almost lose.
Yeah.
And it's like, whoa, you're like, what? Spider-Man losing?
Yeah.
And you're like, oh my God, he might actually lose.
Lose, yeah, so, yeah, yeah. And you know, as much as we love a hero, we love to see him lose because it makes him human.
Yeah.
And again, that sentiment alone is what makes Spider-Man in particular so sensational and so amazing and so spectacular, is because he is human. Mm-hmm. You know, he's still relatable and personable. And so, from what we knew, we learned about Quentin Beck in the MCU is that he was a former Stark Industries employee, mm-hmm. who specialized in holographic technology that Stark apparently took credit for, then firing Beck and relieving him of his duties. And so, do you remember the acronym for the holographic technology? I forgot until I did this.
Is it FART?
Oh, it's so close. It's so close. So close.
Oh, it's not FART?
It's not FART.
Something, no. Something technology.
Yeah. You're so close.
Oh my God.
I have the exact quote from Tony Stark right here.
Oh no, what is it? What a good quiz question.
Yeah. Give up?
AKA. What it now? What is it?
Binarily augmented retroframing, or BARF. God, I gotta work on that acronym.
Barf.
Yeah, you're so close.
It has to do with something leaving your body.
yeah, exactly. So BARF, he created BARF, which is just, it's so funny to think back on. And Quentin himself was essentially way too smart for his own good. And then Stark's death at the end of, this was the end of, this is right after Endgame, correct? Because this is when he's like kind of pulling himself back together.
Yes.
Quentin took this opportunity to pave the way for himself, mm-hmm. after Stark died and then became the maniacal adversary he evolved into. And similarly to the comic, painting himself a hero, which in retrospect is like, oh yeah, they really did kind of nail all
like
of
you
it.
Have to, like, if that's his motivation, like, you got to embarrass him to make him a villain.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we got Night Monkey through this and, and all this good stuff. And so, of course, naturally, poor Peter Parker, he was caught up in the middle of it because of those glasses that contained the interface.
What's the name of the interface? Karen? Not Karen. Oh, that's the first one.
You know this. I was going to have... that's actually your pop quiz.
He's like, huh, okay, what's... Okay. Edith.
Yeah!
Edith!
Yeah! Good job!
After death, I'm still here, something, whatever it is.
E-D-I-T-H.
Yeah, even after death.
Even dead.
Even dead, I'm the
H.
I'm the honchos. No.
Hero.
Yeah.
Oh, you did it. So, that was your pop quiz I was going to ask after all this was done. But yeah, so for the interface, he intercepted Peter Parker for the interface that was left on the glasses from Stark. And so that essentially led up to the events of the multiverse literally hanging in the balance. Like, if you think about it, it's all because of Quentin Beck. No Way Home would not have happened if Quentin Beck hadn't gotten so deep into the nitty gritty with Peter Parker. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, at the very, very end, I mean, in retrospect, the entire film, it was interesting because I was like, I don't know if I can hang with, because I was coming from a comic book background. I was expecting, he's going to be a magician, an illusionist.
Yeah.
And I thought it was really, really clever that they changed him into sort of this technological wizard.
I like that
yeah,
a lot.
And then to introduce the drones and all that stuff, and really have him,
it really works into the world.
It worked perfectly, to be perfectly honest, and the way he worked on Peter and Stark so perfectly as a result was, I thought they did a great job. And of course, at the end of it all, you know, Beck died by his own bullet, cleverly outsmarted by Spider-Man, which when that shot rang out in the theater, I literally, like, I never jolt in movies. It takes a lot. And I, like, flinched so hard because it's like, oh my God, he got shot. And it's like, nope, Spider-Man got him in his own illusion. Fantastic. And so, yeah, you got the pop quiz, so we don't even have to do that. Well done. How do you feel about Jake Gyllenhaal's portrayal?
Like, I thought he did great. Jake Gyllenhaal is a great actor.
And you know that, I mean, we've talked about it probably many times in our Spider-Man episodes, but yeah, he originally had auditioned to be Spider-Man in Tobey Maguire's era.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of teasing back and forth, especially because after Tobey dated Kirsten Dunst, Jake Gyllenhaal then dated Kirsten Dunst. And so there was this weird animosity that the media was trying to portray them as. And so for him to fast forward 10, 15 years later and become a Spider-Man villain and a very good one is actually pretty awesome. So speaking of cheesy outfits and whatnot, aesthetic. So it's funny that you mentioned how you would not take this villain seriously if you saw him in live action, because if you scroll down, Jeff, it's actually quite accurate, aside the chest plate armor.
Yeah.
So even in this instance, it's pretty unique.
It is.
Like, it looks like it, even down to the weird fibrous pattern.
Yeah.
That he has in the comics. They just added some.
Yeah. MCU-ified. And it's like a CGI VFX suit. Like, that's, you know.
Exactly.
So it's like, oh, yeah, of course. It's that so makes sense. Wild.
Yeah. It's so great. They did a very great job, like, transposing this character from this very dated, supervillain look to a modern. Yeah, he looks kind of hokey, but it's on purpose. It's on purpose. He's meant to look like a theatrical supervillain / antihero. I appreciated how they tailored it and made it look pretty spot on, especially with Beck creating this gigantic persona and then really being a normal nerdy dude on the inside. Especially like in the parts where they would literally show him in like the gray, the, I don't know what you call
those. It's like, yeah, the CGI suits.
The mocap suits, yeah. And then, of course, a shout out to Anna B. Shepherd, who was the costume design lead for Far From Home. And then with that said, we can just roll right into powers and paraphernalia. So Mysterio hardly has powers like most of his colleagues and counterparts.
Finally.
Yeah. Like, he really doesn't have anything. He's more so an intellect than anything supernatural. And that said, he's a brilliant engineer and inventor with advanced knowledge in robotics, who also dabbles in chemistry for various hallucinogens and is trained in the art of hypnotism with a touch of psychiatry and physiological manipulation.
Wow, now that's just a regular human being right there.
Yeah, true. He's just a smart guy. Like, I could have put smart guy and that would have been it. But yeah, that's pretty much it. And then, of course, in live action, similarly, Beck in the MCU had no real powers. He was just relying on his suit and the technology he created to get him through all of the entire film, and his genius level intellect that really kind of, like, it's kind of wild because he's so smart, but his ego preceded him. So
yeah,
they always fall with that ego at the end.
They always do.
And so now we can talk about family, friends, and affiliations. This is interesting because, like, you know, not what I'm realizing is that villains don't tend to have, like, friends.
Yeah.
They just have, like, family that kind of wronged them in some way. Yep. And so the same goes for Beck. And first up are Elmore and Henrietta Beck, who are his parents. So it's unknown what exactly happened to Henrietta, but the short version is that she passed away very early in Beck's life. Like, I want to say maybe 4 or 5 years old. Mm-hmm. Like, there's no way he was older than 7, I think, when this all started to come to be. And so that whole scenario, his mother dying, left his father to raise his son on his own. And he comes from Riverside, California.
That's so random.
Is that wild? I was like, wait a minute. I'm from, not Riverside distinctly, but I'm from that area. Yeah, original. Yeah. I grew up in that area. So I was like, oh my God. It actually is quite interesting because until, you know, modern, until like maybe I want to say 20, 25 years ago, that whole area in Riverside and Inland Empire wasn't nearly as built up as it is now. So imagining this taking place in the 60s, 70s, maybe 50s even, gosh, it might, yeah, it's kind of interesting. So Beck essentially came from his childhood home on the East and then moved into, you know, Los Angeles, Hollywood, the dream, the Hollywood dream.
Yes, yes.
You know? And so Elmore, however, wasn't exactly the kind-hearted single dad he could have been, and he constantly mocked his son. So the poor boy, again, a baby, a child, maybe 6 years old, playing with his little, you know, his King Kong and his Godzilla and making them fight in front of a video camera and, like, really directing and producing all at once. Elmore wasn't about it. He would knock it down. He would break his stuff. He would break the camera. And he would make fun of the boy, like, oh, don't you have anything better to do? And then he would, like, yell to his wife, his dearly departed wife, like, look at this boy that you left me with. He's got nothing better to do, nothing to offer the world. And so he did find solace with a cousin named Maguire Beck.
Wow.
I know. I checked the timing. She came before Tobey Maguire. So that's a full-on coincidence that they named, that they happened to name this character Maguire.
Yeah.
And so they call her Maggie. And so she's the only true member of the Beck family documented in canon aside the parents. And so Maguire and Quentin got along pretty well. Mm-hmm. In fact, it was Maguire's father who became the father figure that Beck needed and encouraged him to become an FX guru and a director and into film and producing stuff. And so Maguire herself, unfortunately, would later become an adversary of Spider-Man as well.
Of course.
Known as Jack O'Lantern. And it's exactly what you think it is.
It's a guy with a pumpkin on his head?
It's basically a person with a pumpkin on their head, and it looks like it's kind of like a goblin.
Yeah.
Like the shroud and the two-tone layer on a glider, but a pumpkin head. And so, and she also became Mad Jack. And so we're not going to talk about all that stuff. It kind of, you know, that's where you're going into the deep in the weeds there. But none of these characters have MCU counterparts. None of them. So it's kind of wild that we are very much introduced to Beck, who honestly in the MCU just became a supervillain because of Tony Stark. It's all Tony Stark's fault.
Yeah.
Like, who knows if he was, I mean, he's probably, again, like the comic book, never credited, always mistreated in the workplace. But this kind of aligns with the persona. Yeah. And so there is one character, however, we've seen in multiple mediums, and that's Phineas Mason, a.k.a. the Tinkerer.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So not a friend, but an ally of sorts. Phineas is responsible for Beck's entry into crime to begin with when it comes to the comics. And so as we mentioned at the beginning of the episode, Beck first appeared in Amazing Spider-Man number 2, where all this began. And so Beck was posing as an alien in a costume with the Tinkerer's men. So they had concocted this elaborate plan that, like, aliens were stealing government papers and stuff.
That's hilarious.
And it was all because Beck had created the costumes and the set and the props that they were using. And so they were obtaining all the sensitive material and all this information from the 1% to resell to the highest bidder in the criminal underground. And so that was his job before he came in later in number 13 as Mysterio.
Wow.
Yeah. And so their plans, of course, were thwarted by Spider-Man.
Of course.
And so this is something that has been retold a few times in continuity, and they've reworked it a little bit. Mm-hmm. But it's all more to better supplement the fact that this is why he hates Spider-Man. He didn't just come out the gate and be like, I don't like him. Like, there's actually a reason.
Yeah.
They try to substantiate why he hated Spider-Man to begin with. And it works. And so, yes, on the MCU side, Phineas Mason, the Tinkerer, portrayed by Michael Chernus, first seen in 2017's Spider-Man Homecoming.
Oh, wow.
So you remember this guy. At first, I was like, I know. I think I know him. And then you think back to it, how Vulture had that layer where they were acquiring all of the debris.
Yes.
He was the sort of rotund guy the little goggles, and he would make all the guns and all the apparatuses. So that was him. And then we also saw a version of the Tinkerer in Sony's Spider-Man Miles Morales game. Mm-hmm. And this is how I knew that this is what you were thinking of right off the bat, where he was gender bent into Finn Mason, Miles's childhood friend, voiced by Jasmine Savoy Brown.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember that I thought it was a pretty good twist. Like, I mean, I kind of caught on that she was Tinkerer.
She was, or something. Yeah, a villain, or somebody. Or a bad person.
Yeah, definitely somewhere, because she was very smart and was good at tinkering things.
Yeah.
but yeah.
Good way to put it.
Yeah. It was very interesting to see that version of the character. But yeah, it's interesting that we've seen two versions of a very, what we would call a D-list villain. And so that's why I'm like, Stilt Man?
We're waiting. We're patiently waiting. It's gonna happen.
Yeah, it's so funny. I just can't wait. So if they can do the Tinkerer, they can do Stiltman. And so for this next group, they're definitely far from friends, but I just didn't want to go super deep into all of that. Mm-hmm. I wanted to mention the Sinister Six. Mm-hmm. And so Mysterio was recruited by Dr. Octopus shortly after his attempt at framing the Webhead. And at the same time, the original group also included Vulture, Kraven the Hunter, Electro, and Sandman. So
it's a goated group, right?
Yeah,
there.
It's the goated group for sure. And last but not least, I would be remiss to not mention the infamous redemption of Gwen Stacy, where Mysterio, through the vision of Harry Osborn, had cleared my fave of a terrible, terrible storyline where they had made it that she had an affair with Norman Osborn and birthed two genetically enhanced twins. Mm-hmm. So what they did is that, you know, they printed this in little modern continuity, like, I don't know, 5 years ago, if even, that when it all came to light, it was an elaborate illusion. All put together by Mysterio just to...
I think that's such a good, like, villain power, though. Yeah. Illusions, man.
Yeah, yeah, just to stick it to his comrades. Yeah. Yeah, it's so crazy. He's very interesting as a character, and I think the film, even though he was only in one installment and not, like, a recurring thing, mm-hmm. I think they really honed in on how dangerous he could be.
Yeah. I know. Dude, like I said, what I said at the top, like...
Yeah.
Like, he was gonna lose. Like, I was like, how was he gonna beat him? Yeah, I don't even know how he was gonna beat him.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. And so, before we move on, I just wanted to say, how crazy is it that we've seen every single original Sinister Six member in different films, but never together against the same Spider-Man?
Like, that's what they have to do for Tom's last trilogy.
Yeah.
Like, it has to be, like...
Yeah.
Because once... I'll be honest. Once Tom is done with Spider-Man,
yeah, he's done.
He's done.
He's gonna have kids. He's gonna disappear.
Done. I heard that he said once he has kids, he's done. Mm-hmm. And he's in Christopher. He's a star. He's the lead in Christopher Nolan's next film.
That's
like,
so crazy.
So you better, like, that's why I'm like, okay, he has a lot of control, mm-hmm. probably.
Yeah, I think so. Like, I think so.
Story wise, and I think Feige also wants to tell, like, yes, let's tell like a good Spider-Man story, whether it's one or two movies. Mm-hmm. It has to be good, and I think it has to be a sinister storyline. Like, you've already put all of these villains mm-hmm. in the MCU ones too. Mm-hmm. Like, they're all been here and there.
Would you not at all? Because not that I do. Some people do. Would you have considered No Way Home a soft Sinister Six scenario?
Because it was three villains.
Yeah.
Yes.
Three.
Oh,
Dr. Octopus, Green Goblin, okay, yeah. Electro.
They focused on three.
Okay,
three main villains.
Yeah. Lizard, yeah.
Yeah, but,
they had,
you know.
Quite a few. Yeah.
And it was also during a time of post-COVID.
Yeah.
So it probably changed a lot. But I feel like if you can spread out mm-hmm. a Sinister Six storyline across three films, I think that's incredibly possible.
Yeah. And at the end of it, I would segue, not kill him. He doesn't have to die. Yeah,
like, what happened? Like, what happened at? Like, I want a moment of, like, what happened in the Insomniac game. Mm. They're in mm-hmm. top of the raft.
Yeah, yeah.
They all attack him, and it's Doc Ock.
It was so hard.
Yeah, I was just like, these guys keep. Vulture, away from me!
I was having a hard time.
Yeah, like I am. Guys, please.
It took me a while to beat
so
that one.
If there could be a moment like that in like the middle of that trilogy, and then you go in try to, you know, beat the main one, whoever it is, maybe.
Yeah.
Then I think it's like cool, like, because. Love Spider-Man it, in film, live action, hasn't got a Sinister Six storyline yet.
No.
Like, we need to see Spider-Man 1v6.
Yeah.
That's what we
100%.
Need. 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah, for me, like, if that ever happens, mm-hmm. then it's like, cool. No one ever has to make another Spider-Man film mm-hmm. again.
Peter Parker,
yeah. Yes. No one ever has to make another Peter Parker film. Yeah. We've seen his uncle die a million thousand times.
Yes.
We've seen Aunt May, hot and old.
hot Hot May.
We've seen both versions Hot of May. MJ. Yeah. We just need a little side quest Black Cat.
Oh yeah.
You know?
100%.
Where he, I don't know, apparently knocks her up.
I would die. Oh, Peter.
But I think if we just get a main core Sinister Six storyline, I think the audience would.
And you don't mind which six. You just want six villains.
I want at least three main ones that everyone knows.
So familiar ones.
At least three familiar ones.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Okay.
But I mean, at this point, everybody knows them.
It could be Harry Goblin. Like, yeah. You know, whatever.
It could be any of those. Yeah. So as long as we get that.
One quick question. Would you consider Black Cat part of the six?
No.
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 Interesting.
It's a little side thing. Little side piece.
Yeah, she's
a little attractive side piece.
A little distraction, for sure. Yeah, I agree. I fully agree. And it would be good to finally just, that's how they close off the Peter Parker. Just let him go. Introduce in those last 5 minutes, introduce the next Spider-Man. Boom. Done. Move on. Perfect scenario. But we'll see, I guess, especially with the animated films and all the buzz around Beyond the Spider-Verse. But who's to know? So that brings us to love interests. incredibly short list. It only has one person on this one.
I mean, who would want to love a manipulative guy?
Yeah, truly. And so
me, I'm kidding.
So Betsy Schneider was originally Beck's childhood friend. Mm. And so as she was like, they lived in an apartment complex. She was like the girl, you know, two doors down or whatever. Mm-hmm. And they grew up together. And came to be, again, because, you know, Beck kind of fled. He fled Riverside, went to LA for his dream, whatnot, kind of became successful. And then he decides at one point to go back home, to go visit his own old home. And it only causes him complete disturbance. He is bothered. He is distressed. But he runs into Betsy as an adult. And so he actually, they fit right back into it very quickly, even though they haven't seen each other in decades. And he entrusts her to know, he shares that he is Mysterio with her. And at first she was like, oh, this is pretty cool. Like, this is awesome. But like you said, she catches on that, you know what? It's not all cool, fancy magic. It's actually quite manipulative. He's kind of evil. Mm-hmm. He's probably murdered people.
Very.
Yeah. And then that completely dissuades him from moving on with him.
Uh-huh.
And so it frightened her to the point where she drifted from the romantic connection. And then she began a relationship with the same man who ends up saving her from Mysterio. And so it's this guy named Joseph Smith, aka the Crimson Bat. And so I was going to go down the Joseph Smith like rabbit hole, but all you really need to know is that he was also a stunt guy, so they knew each other from the industry. But I think what had happened was that he stepped into a puddle of water and got electrocuted at the same time or something, and it gave him powers. And so he became also a Z-list Spider-Man villain. And so it was Spider-Man versus Mysterio versus the Crimson Bat versus Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the middle of that weird triangle is Betsy. And so Betsy got with Joe, and that was the end of it in the comics. But we have actually seen Betsy Schneider in a different form, not in the MCU. However, she did appear in the secondary storyline in Sony's Spider-Man 2 game.
Whoa.
With the Mysterium and all. See, do you remember that girl with the short, curly hair who was like really annoying in the Mysterium? And and she had like a blazer. I'm sure if you saw a picture of her, you'd be like her. She always had that Bluetooth thing on.
Yeah.
Like that's Betsy Schneider in the games. So she created the Mysterium with Beck in the games, but she was also conspiring against him with Cole Whitman, hoping to frame Mysterio for all the crimes that they were committing.
Mm-hmm.
So I think originally they had created the Mysterium to lure in like influencers and rich people, and then they were robbing them. And so Cole and Betsy were doing it and then blaming it all on Mysterio, who was actually not such a bad guy in the game.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was implied that he was like reformed. If you listen to the dialogue and uncover all the Easter eggs and stuff, yeah, you get the vibe that, okay, he was a bad guy and then became a good guy and he was being like they had him like tied up in the back room
yeah.
or something.
Yeah, yeah. It was kind of a way to like get them like the money or something. Yeah.
Right, right. And so I could not find her voice actor confirmed anywhere. So sorry, no credit for Betsy Schneider, but she exists. Now for notable adversaries. Because he doesn't really go against anybody else in the MCU except for Peter Parker. This is clearly a short list, but I did want to touch on one other one, who is none other than the other side of Team Red, Matt Murdock.
Wow.
Daredevil.
That would be Team Red, man. Let's get him.
Yes. Please.
I think that has to happen too.
Yeah.
Like, well, I don't know, man.
If you had put Team Red in that, when you put me on the spot and you're like, what would you rather see most?
Mm-hmm.
Team Red would have been number one on the list. Team Red all
you
the
have
way.
Charlie Cox,
oh my
Tom
God.
Holland, and Ryan Reynolds in a room.
Oh my God. And Ryan Reynolds doesn't even have to fully be in it. You know yeah. what I mean? He can pop up a little bit.
Yeah.
But
like
you
make,
give me
like
those,
make Deadpool the cameo character.
Yes.
Like make him pop up in random scenes.
Exactly.
Give him like 10-second quips.
Yep.
Like in each, every 5-10 minutes.
That's all he needs.
And you're kind of like, what the, like, wait, was that
That's
Deadpool?
All he needs.
And then like yeah. literally you just have Deadpool come in being like, ah, you guys suck.
Yeah.
And then leave.
And then leave.
And then leave.
And it'd be great. It would be great. But yeah, so in the comics, Mysterio and Daredevil actually have quite a bit of crossover and has nothing to do with Spider-Man, which is the craziest part of it all.
Wow.
And so this is not at all an expected setup, but these two went toe-to-toe in a weighty arc titled Guardian Devil, which we've talked a little bit, a little teeny tiny bit about in episode 37, which was, of course, all about Daredevil. And so I wrote the shortest version possible in my notes. And so let's see how we can get through this. So, a woman presumably gives birth to the Antichrist without intercourse. Karen Page is diagnosed with HIV, presumably from her sex working days. Foggy, this is all at the same time. Foggy is accused of murdering a woman with whom he was having an affair.
Jesus.
Daredevil goes to Doctor Strange for help, and then is also put at odds with Black Widow. Mephisto makes an appearance,
okay.
as does Bullseye, who kills Karen while attempting to steal the baby first mentioned. And then at the end of it all, it's revealed that Mysterio is behind all of the bad juju that was happening in this entire arc. And he was just looking to go out on a high note because he was diagnosed with a brain tumor
Jeez.
A year before.
That is, whatever the worst thing that can happen, happened.
Yeah. It's so nuts. And so it was a very dark storyline because, you know, of course, Daredevil is not a happy-go-lucky title. There are a few runs where it's lighthearted.
Yeah.
But man, like, you go back to classic or even just, you know, contemporary Daredevil, he gets severely depressed. And he has moments of, like, suicidal thoughts in this entire storyline. And so when all of this is going down, he's clearly at his low point because, mm-hmm. yeah, Karen is, like, basically dying and thinks she should die. And then here comes this baby, this demonic antichrist baby. And it the plan is so insane because it turned out that Mysterio artificially inseminated the girl who got pregnant to put all this stuff in motion. And oh, it's just horrible. And so for Karen to then die in the crosshairs of Bullseye, who was trying to once again for the billionth time get to Daredevil, and then it'd be Mysterio behind all of it, putting all the pieces together, just so he could be like, "Ha ha, I'm dying, but at least I got
but
you.
At least I created chaos."
Yeah, he's essentially celebrating his chaos. And so, when all is said and done, at the end of these, I believe it's 7 or 8 issues of this arc, when all of it is said and done, Mysterio more or less pleased with himself. He takes a note out of Kraven's book and dies by suicide via gunshot.
Jeez.
Shoots himself and he offs himself. And
good
so
lordy,
like,
lordy, Michael Jordy.
Yeah, it's really bad. And so, yeah, that brings us to Matt Murdock, Daredevil on the MCU side, portrayed by the goat, the cinnamon roll, Charlie Cox. First seen
Love
in
him.
2015's Daredevil season 1.
Still going.
Still going. Oh, love him, love him, love him. And so as we know by now, these two haven't even crossed over in live action, save for a brick thrown through the window that said, "We believe Mysterio," that Matt caught. instead of it hitting Peter. That's the only crossover we've seen between Mysterio and Daredevil, and that's probably it, unfortunately. But man, yeah, read that comic.
That sounds insane.
It's so crazy. It's so much. And of course, that leads us to the man of the hour, Peter Parker. Spider-Man.
You don't say.
So while Mysterio's dislike for Spider-Man seems simple in his first appearance, it was further added to decades later, like I mentioned. Instead of just a simple matter that he wanted to gain recognition for his work while capitalizing on the web singer, writers decided to add a slew of events, very dramatic ones at that, that did and did not involve Spidey, that ultimately made Beck as angered, as vengeful as he eventually became over time, like effects and things that he'd created that went terribly wrong for him, but great for Spider-Man. And, you know, like he just kept getting thwarted. Mm-hmm. That's basically it. He was taking L's left and right, taking L's. And so he blamed it on Spider-Man. It was always Spider-Man's fault. Grew the hatred, and that's who we ended up knowing. And so it all built up into a depression for Beck and a mental breakdown, which naturally ensured his lifelong hatred towards Spider-Man and a little bit of everybody else, as you saw. And then, of course, Peter Parker, Spider-Man, portrayed by Tom Holland in the MCU. And so, again, these two collided in 2019's Far From Home, directed by John Watts. And so I don't know about you, but back in the films really got me at first because Jake Gyllenhaal plays a pretty convincing good bad guy.
Yes.
At first I was like, did they flip it? Is he gonna be like helping out?
Yeah.
But of course, you know, we saw very quickly that was not the case.
No. My favorite line is when he's like, get this stupid thing off me. I was like, oh man, that really was good.
Yeah, he's really, really good. And like, I'm not super duper familiar with all of Jake Gyllenhaal's work, but I've watched quite a few of his films.
Yeah. No, he's very consistent. Nightcrawler.
Yes, Nightcrawler.
That is
like
such a good film.
Unbelievable. Yeah. He's fantastic. And of course, you know, Donnie Darko. But yeah, he's great. I think this might be my favorite role of his just because he's such a drama queen. He's such a drama queen, but also deceptively evil.
Like
and
enough
good.
To be like, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, he's so good, especially in the scenes with Nick Fury. And I was like, I remember watching it like, they just let him walk into the S.H.I.E.L.D. base because they're like, yeah. And then only for him to be like, no, you're just a con artist. It's like so crazy
and
to me.
He's so good.
But he played it so well, yeah. And yeah, I no notes, man. Like him and Peter Parker, again, very intense fight. No Way Home was brutal for sure, but man, their fights in Far From Home were something else. I didn't get to rewatch. I didn't have enough time to rewatch it before, you know, this homework. But man, it stuck with me because like it was trippy as hell.
Mm-hmm.
So, are you ready for one last pop quiz for the road?
Oh my gosh! So oh my gosh!
True or false? Okay. So, true or false, Mysterio published an album called Dreamlusions, where every song was about Spider-Man. True or false?
That is hilarious and obsessive. Yes. Kind of creep. It's so creepy, I want to say false. But let's go true.
Well, Jeff, you would be correct.
Yeah, you obsessed weirdo.
He was so obsessed. So there is a link, but I'll just pull it up very quickly. And so they are going toe-to-toe in a very modern age comic book. They're throwing quips back and forth. He's talking about how he's going to go into music. He confirms, in fact, Dreamlusions. He's like, wow, I can't believe I guessed it.
I was just kidding, but all
yeah,
right.
I'm just kidding. But yeah, he wrote an album all about Spider-Man. Now that is something I would like to hear. So that leaves us with other versions and in other media. We're just going to talk about the video game version because, you know, although there are other versions of Mysterio that are pretty good, Sony's Spider-Man 2 version is pretty monumental in his own right.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's definitely the most prominent where he's voiced by Noshir Dalal. And so, yeah, as we discussed a little bit above with Betsy Schneider, the gamer versus Mysterio was an illusionist and head of VR development at Studio Mysterium, an attraction / VR landscape based at Coney Island. I've never been to Coney Island. Have you? I've heard stories. Like, yeah, all the locals are like, videos. Don't go there.
I've just seen videos, yeah. But I have never been. I don't. And every time I've gone to New York, yeah. I've
never
I do not
there.
Travel that
yeah.
far.
Yeah, never. Yeah. Never. I really want to go one day. What they should have done, though, is like I think it was during the pandemic, unfortunately, or just before it or whatever, but they should have had like a straight up Mysterium pop up in Coney Island. That would have been so sick.
It would have been vandalized immediately. Yeah,
I think you're right, actually.
Maybe that's why they didn't do it.
Probably, because I hear you shouldn't be drinking the water at Coney Island or something. There's something like don't eat the seafood or yeah. I don't know. But yeah, so like I mentioned above, there was some narrative that between games, I'm not sure if it was the first game or the second game, but there was a narrative that suggested that Mysterio in Gamerverse had gone toe-to-toe with Peter Parker's Spider-Man, mm-hmm. but then he was reformed after the fact, and then we then interact with him most as Miles Morales yeah. in the game sequel. I loved those mini games, for the record. The Mysterio ones were so fun.
Did you? Yeah. Oh, those were fun. Yeah.
Yeah. The DDR one. Yeah. Or it was kind of like
the DJ one.
Guitar Hero. The yeah. DJ one. Yeah. Love that one. And so for Almost Was, I honestly didn't think I was going to find anything. And I did. So this was surprising. Evidently, Matt Damon and Matt Smith were both approached for the role of Mysterio, however, went on to play other characters in the Marvel Universe, a.k.a. actor Loki, mm-hmm. when it came to Matt Damon,
yep.
and the infamous Milo in Morbius from Matt Smith. So it's kind of funny how they...
Yeah.
But Matt Damon, can't see it. I mean, maybe.
I mean, depending, but honestly.
I can see it. Matt Smith a little bit. Yeah. A little bit.
Maybe, but, yeah. But yeah, Jake Gyllenhaal
just... Jake Gyllenhaal killed it. He was great. So, yeah. Future of the character in the MCU. Do you think we'll see another Mysterio? Because, like we kind of hinted above, Quentin Beck is the first of the Mysterios. There are multiple Mysterios, but he's the most prominent, most popular. So, do you think we would see another version of him?
I don't think we'll see another version.
Yeah.
But it's also easy to... you don't need... Maybe you can just use Jake Gyllenhaal's voice because obviously you don't need to see his face.
That's true.
So you can get away with that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
Yeah.
I think he's one of the ones where I'm like, I think he should be at least one of the three, like main six. Yeah.
Like maybe he pre-programmed, like the video of him telling the world that Peter Parker is Spider-Man, maybe there's a version where he pre-programmed a full artificial intelligence to do something.
Yes.
Whatever
like,
it is.
I like the villains that we have in the trilogy. Obviously not counting the Raimi villains. Yes, obviously them, but I like the Vulture that the MCU gave. Mm-hmm. I like Mysterio.
And there's Sandman too.
The Sandman
comes back,
and it's just like Lizard. But then if you want to bring the Doc Ock, boom, go for it. Bring Doc Ock in. Bring the Green Goblin in. Bring those three from the other Spidey universes along with the three I think in the MCU, which is Shocker in the first movie.
Yeah.
I mean, though it was just an end credit scene.
Yeah,
with Vulture.
Mm-hmm.
And then Mysterio.
Mm-hmm.
And then...
They never quite fleshed out Scorpion, but he's floating
and Scorpion,
around.
That's right. Scorpion? Yeah. It wasn't Shocker. Scorpion. And so it's like, you have those. You might as well just kind of lean into it.
Kingpin?
Oh, that's right, Kingpin.
Yeah.
I mean, you live in the city that he's the mayor of, and then, Daredevil's in that thing, too.
Oh, my
so
God.
Why not bring Team Red to the stage? How crazy would it be if there was, if like, honestly, I don't think so because it wasn't leaked.
Mm-hmm.
But what if like Spider-Man didn't make a cameo in the new Daredevil?
Oh my God. Hold me back.
I know.
Hold
it would
me
be
back.
Crazy, right?
If he made a cameo and Stiltman was, I was like, I'm done.
Stiltman for sure.
Check.
Yeah.
Good.
If I see Stiltman even for a second, I'm walking out of the theater and or wherever I'm at and be like, oh, I'm good here.
I'm
never watching the MCU again because I have seen what I wanted to see.
Exactly.
And I'm good.
I'm good. Satisfied.
Exactly. Don't you want to see how the third act? No.
No.
Stiltman was just running across New York. I'm good.
I love it.
Don't talk to me.
Yeah. But yeah, like there's potential. Like again, Mysterio in Daredevil is already like a what? And so imagine, yeah, what if there is a Kingpin in Spider-Man?
Yeah.
Like who knows where they're going to take it? I mean, we all know Kevin Feige knows, but who knows when we'll see any of this? It would be kind of crazy. But I agree. Fully agree. Maybe we'll see a holographic representation of Mysterio in some Sinister Six thing, but only time will tell.
I agree.
So when it comes to a suggested reading for this character, kind of tough, kind of not. I did go back and I read some key issues because I wanted to get to know like kind of his history a little better. So Web Spinners, Tales of Spider-Man, numbers 1-3, 1998. Were pretty good. They shed a little more light on his backstory, especially when it came to Betsy and his upbringing. And to be perfectly honest, like the writing is kind of poetic. It's a bit dense for a comic, but it's pretty poetic. Like how they bring you through the perspective of Peter Parker. And I believe he's also talking about Mary Jane in the same instance. And it's really, really good. Then, of course, Daredevil 1998/1999 Guardian Devil arc. Which was, by the way, written by Kevin Smith.
Wow.
The Kevin Smith.
Goated.
With art from Joe Quesada and Jimmy Palmiotti. 2009's Wolverine, Volume 3, particularly the Old Man Logan story. So, I didn't dive into this because it's technically alternate universe. But similarly to the Wolverine we see in Deadpool Wolverine, you know how at that point he was like, I killed my team and I don't know what happened, and they just never expand on it. This particular story arc, Old Man Logan decimated his fellow X-Men thanks to an elaborate illusion by Quentin Beck. So he did it because Mysterio was able to mask all their sense, manipulate the vision that Logan saw. And so Logan the entire time thought he was killing villains and adversaries.
Oh no.
But it was the X-Men. And so when all was said and done, they were all dead.
That sounds like what happened to Deadpool and Wolverine's Wolverine.
Yeah, literally. Exactly right. And so I think that that was kind of their nod to Mysterio. So maybe that's the Mysterio version of Wolverine.
Because killing the X-Men is...
Yeah, it's kind of a deep
cut. That's hard.
Yeah, they, it's very rare that they even take that route. But yeah, so check that out. And then last but not least, Amazing Spider-Man Annual number 1. And so that's the issue. It's, of course, the annual. So it's the first annual of all the annuals, which means it's a bigger book. But that's where the initial Sinister Six come together with Mysterio in tow for an epic debut of not only the Sinister Six themselves, but also the annual series. So that one's an amazing one. No pun intended. And so with all that said, that's the end of the show. Thanks for listening, guys. And so our next episode, oh my good gravy, with all the hype of Marvel Rivals, as well as our 100th episode.
Crazy.
Jeff, what better way to celebrate all the good stuff than discussing Jeff the Land Shark?
Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Plus a bit of discussion about the game as well as playing the game itself.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're going to figure out some stuff, record some of our gameplay.
Yeah, it'll be put like on maybe, YouTube, like, yeah, maybe like a quick.
Yeah.
A quick A. What is it? Like a quick match. Quick match.
Yeah.
Maybe, and then, or if you want to see more of the match, we'll just run through his backstory and, you know, go from there. But yeah.
Yeah, it'll be fun. Jeff the Land Shark. Yummy,
yummy.
I love the yummy, yummy, but I don't like it when it's used on me.
Oh, no. I just hear it. I was like, no, get me out of this. I know. Please, God.
And every time I'm like, nope, because they're, we'll talk about it in the next episode. And finally, thank you to all our Patreon supporters. And a We Are Groot salute to Tyler, Ariel, Andrea, Ashley, Katie, Andrew, Sherry, Robin, Ed, Laura, Nats, Chris, Jenny, Melanie, Joe, Liz, and Edgar. Follow us on social at STRKCNTRST. And if you like what you hear, review, rate, and subscribe.
Once again, thanks for listening. We will catch y'all in the next one.
Thanks, guys.
Bye.
Bye.
Hello. I'm Quentin Beck, master illusionist, and this is Betsy, my business partner, and Cole, my technical advisor. And this is the next generation of entertainment.